For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So this gassho is this mudra, this hand position, where we place palms together, fingertips together, not this way, not this way, not this, well, sometimes it might be this way, but this little cathedral of our practice. And, you know, maybe about nose-ish height, about a fist width away from the face. Some of you have heard this instruction innumerable times, so I apologize. Thanks. But I welcome you to those palms joined together. And see, this is a little off as we bring it back into alignment. This teaching is always in our body. And then you can notice, like, do I go like this, like clapping? Do I rise up from the ground? But it's kind of nice, this gassho, you know, it's upright and aware and not two and not one. There's like, it's like a little package of Dharma that we carry with us in our bodies. And this is a training in awareness and meeting each thing fully. It's a mirror. How am I showing up? Am I showing up like, you know, off kilter, a little aggressively? What's the pressure? You know, do I feel actually my fingers contact with each other? Am I trying to force my hand into a certain way, or am I allowing it to join? Day and night, we can pay attention to this. An early teacher of mine, Yvonne Ran, who actually died 4 years ago this month, she said a lot of amazing things. One thing she said, you can't change what you're not aware of. So maybe you can, I don't know. But I kind of like it because it's this encouragement to be aware and to extend the field of awareness beyond its edges. Kind of like Star Trek, you know. I must say, as a younger practitioner, I struggled with gassho. You know, I was kind of neurotic about it. Where should it go? Do my hands go here? Are they up too high? Are they this way or that way? When do I do it? You know, if you hang out in monastic settings, you know, like people are doing this all the time, but sometimes they're not. And when do you do it in the zendo? Is it when somebody bows across in the room or whatever, you know? And the most difficulty I had with it was when I was meeting one of my dear teachers on the path at Green Gulch Farm. So, you know, you walk around in this other position, shashu. That's the way we motor around Zen places. And when I was first practicing with Rabbi Anderson, I was very shy. I was like, I'm not from California. Do I really belong here? What's going on here? You know, will somebody see me? See how horrible my practice is? You know, it's full of that kind of nonsense. And so I was kind of shy. I also wanted to be respectful and didn't know what the appropriate manners were, which is generally the case in my life. I'm always trying to be, what's going on here? Sometimes by the time I ask that question, the moment's gone. But in those days, I remember walking along the paths of Green Gulch, and I would kind of notice Reb Anderson walking around on the same path coming across me. And I'd like put my head down, you know, I'm in like this, you know, posture. And then I go like a little quick gusho and kind of scurry away. He must have thought I was really strange, but probably this wasn't new for him. I was hoping he didn't notice, you know. But then I realized, like, every time he passed me, he was stopping. He would stop and bring his hands up, and I would run by. And then I started to slow down when I saw him. I was like, oh, I can stop. Stop. Then I'd kind of be like, no. And then slowly we would meet each other and bring our palms together in unison, and sometimes just a little bow. Like I said, in some ways almost the bow is extra. Just a little. Sometimes it would almost just be like this. It was very touching, this offering. You know, maybe we passed each other 100, 200 times, and then even more before meeting. I still feel it in my body, this deep gratitude for this silent communication, this silent teaching of the Dharma. So this mudra, this instrument for sealing, is also an instrument for meeting and verifying everything we meet. You know, of course, when we enter the meditation space, after we cross the threshold, the first thing we do before bowing, before really anything, is placing the hands in gassho. And it marks the continuity of our practice together. You know, even when we're doing prostrations, full bows to the floor, or standing bow, first thing is this movement, but it starts with this. It starts with this collection, bringing forth acknowledgement of oneness amongst difference. This articulated movement of the body in gassho, it starts before the hands are raised. And maybe it continues endlessly. No. This is a complete training in non-separation and wholeness. The many are included in what appears to be the one. So stopping, just you enter the zendo a few steps, you stop and collect the body, the heart, and mind. And then beginning this conversation in Zazen, in this room, in our life. So I'll just say some things about what the silent communication in gassho is about. I mentioned training in awareness, but awareness of our interbeing, of our connection and wholeness. This begins, ironically, through just collecting what seems to be this being to meet the vastness that is reality. In this silent communication, we're verifying, we're attesting to, we're inviting, consecrating in some ways the dignity of self and other as Buddha. Bringing forth the radiance our Buddha fields. We're also showing up. This is a gesture of here I am. Here we are together. Showing up and turning towards care and connection. I think it was Aishin last week who offered this teaching that was offered to her of like something like, maybe Aishin, you could pipe up if you're still there. But something that Galen said that was something like, we're here because every day people are making hundreds and hundreds of choices to turn towards the Dharma. That we're all doing this. So this is this turning towards the Dharma. And Aishin, if you want to elaborate on that, feel free.
That is pretty much exactly what she said. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Since there's just a photo of her, I wasn't sure what the silent communication was. So thank you for voicing that affirmation. Choices to turn towards. Just to stop the body and offer another piece of this communication, another facet of the jewel of communication in our palms joined, is a blessing. You know, it's generosity to even just take a breath to acknowledge the Buddha everywhere. Of course, there's other things, our communality, our oneness in the manyness. There's warmth and gratitude, appreciation. It's hard to be kind of mean in this posture. I guess you could. You know, Reb could have scowled at me, said, look at that dodo bird, Zen student. I didn't feel that, though. There's something, you know, kind of a nice wiring in this position. It's also sealing liberation and emptiness, affirming the boundlessness of life and experience in this silent language of Gassho. We turn to the present moment and are liberated, you could say, from our ideas about it. And this communication is in the body. Also, think about this, upright, somewhat gentle, but firm and responsive. This is also embodiment of the precepts and the transcendent practices of the Bodhisattva, like generosity, which I already mentioned, patience, discipline. It takes a little discipline to just bring that much attention. Vitality, there's some energy, and there's a meditative kind of samadhi of palms joined. And compassionate wisdom. There are a lot of difficult situations right now. Maybe there always have been. The beginning here, maybe ending here, is a way. A way. This also joins us to our Buddha ancestors, past, present, and future, who somehow have been practicing this for a long time with us. So this is engaging and stepping forward. So we stop, but in that stopping, we're meeting. So there's showing up to your life, which isn't separate from the life of everything, just as it is. So when in doubt, bodhisattvas, first order of bodhisattva business, palms joined. And if you're too tired to sit zazen, just this. One hand will do. Sometimes, you know, when I'm making an offering, there's still one hand. Sometimes there's no hands, but there's still this. This isn't limited to the physical body, by the way. I know someone who had a terrible car accident whose body was broken and ravaged, and they can no longer put their hands together in this perfect looking way. It's gnarled, you know, but so beautiful. So it's not like we're going to go around and go, oh, look at all those fingers. This is a concentration practice, but we practice with what we have and we bring ourselves fully to that. Even if we don't have hands or arms, there is an attitude that we can hold in our bodies, in our tired bodies. You know, there's often the many-armed Avalokiteshvara with some responsive hands to meet the suffering of the world. But usually in the center, there's this. All of those hands radiating from this. Silent communication. So, palms joined, meeting the one and the many, leap into the ocean of compassion. We can leap, be dolphins. We can leap beyond the many and the one into the ocean of blessings, into the ocean of compassion and connection. So, that's maybe enough for me about this. So I just want to encourage everyone to remember this little practice if things are a little hard. And you can always add a little mantra to it. You know, just this. Hello, world. Silent communication. How wondrous. So thank you all very much, Bodhisattvas. I think we have a little time to chat with each other and, you know, apologize for bringing up this such a basic instruction that everyone knows. However, I still remind myself of it now and again. So thank you for bearing with me in that. And does anybody have any comments about this practice? Douglas Bodhisattva.
Yeah, I don't know if people have noticed that when there are pictures of Suzuki Roshi doing Gassho, it's not perfect because he had broken a finger.
Wrong.
But, you know, I've always appreciated the idea that various positions of our hands and body as mudras, as seals, because they're not just evidence of that we're practicing, but like seals on documents. Even now, not as much as before, but even they're still documents that the seal doesn't just show, oh yeah, this is a document signed by this corporation, or this is the seal of a notary public. Yeah, that's really her seal. It's not an effective document. It brings it into effect. It's not, and once it's sealed. Before that, it's a very interesting document. It's been signed, but it's not effective. And then suddenly, it's real. It's having the power. And there's something of that, I think, in when we do gassho, when we sit, we have our hands in the meditation mudra, and for that matter, when we sit upright and we have our legs crossed, that all is also called the Buddha mudra sometimes. Or when we walk with our hands in shashu, all of those things, and it's just the intention of doing it. I mean, it evidences, yeah, this is formal practice, but it also, just the intention of doing that brings us back to right here in our surroundings and our being with other people, and it brings us, it brings, helps to bring about that awareness of not two, not one. We're all here. We're here together in our surroundings. So, sorry, Paul Kopp isn't here because he's written a good bit about skills in Buddhism. But, yeah, so I thank you very much for your talk. It really meant true to me.
You're welcome, and thanks for elaborating on the seal, because the seal itself is considered to have this seals, you know, by that I mean ink and stone seals or whatever, but they actually represent in traditionally like a lot the person themselves. So they bringing to life, like Douglas said, bringing to life, like instantiating. And that's why this verification, this realization, practice realization, you could say, in this mudra, which is so powerful. Dylan Bodhisattva.
So, yeah, I love Gassho. And I one thing that I haven't been able to figure out yet is Gassho in public. Because there are times in the day when my instinctual response when somebody has done something that's really helpful or like, you know, gave me directions or pointed to me where to get the thing that I'm in the store to get, that, you know, the instinct is just to go, oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. But I start to feel torn between, you know, expressing Buddha and also the encouragement of like practicing like a fool, like not trying to bring the trappings of the temple into the marketplace, you know, out of some sort of power trip or, you know, like sense of...
That's practicing like a fool.
Yeah, I don't know.
but not like an idiot.
So I guess the question is like, you know, is it, you know, maybe there's not one rule, but just what's the energy about doing Gassho like in the supermarket?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. And my other great teacher of Gassho is my own personal teacher, Tayo. And the way we often practiced together was going to grocery stores and recycling and going to hardware stores. And, you know, when we're driving, if there was roadkill, some animals killed by vehicles, we would Gassho together as we go by. Now he's driving, right? So he'd do like a one-handed kind of nod.
Yeah.
But in grocery stores, my instruction, I said, how do you approach the cashier? He said, well, like you approach an altar. But this isn't imposing something on someone. So this is just like all of our practice where, like I said, you don't need to use your hands to Gassho.
Mm-hmm.
You remember it in your body. You train that in your body. But, and that's why you have that impulse. This is wonderful, Dylan Bodhisattva. You have this Bodhisattva impulse. And now you're training in the skillful means of how do I bring forth my Gassho in every single moment in my life? How does it exude for every pore of my body without disturbing a particle of dust, without putting that Gassho in somebody's face? But sometimes it's just how you might hand your card or how you might enter your digits into a keypad. You know, there's this bodily silent communication that says, oink, we're sealed, we're connected, we're together, and we're meeting on equal ground, and there's space for all of us. Thank you very much for taking care of my groceries, even if I know you're having a bad day and you're scowling at me. You know, so, or it's like, you know, you gave this great Dharma talk about like working in a cafe and having to give the bathroom code like 100 times a day to all these people who were like, you know, really wanting to use the facility. And what's the code? And you've got like making 7 espressos and 5 lattes at the same time. And still offering that code, it may appear to be words. What was the 3-5?
9637.
9637, yeah. And so even in 9637, those appear to be words, but gassho is expressed in that without even people realizing it necessarily. Just like I didn't realize Rev was actually stopping until, you know, several years into my sloppy practice, my arrogant practice, thinking that, you know, somehow I had to be different to be able to meet someone so kind. But, you know, we have to learn these lessons. Thank Buddha that we have. Because the alternative is much worse. And I see some golden hands on the screen. So I'd like to invite, I don't know who was first.
I think Joe was.
Joe. David went like this, but it looked like that. Okay, thank you. Joe Bodhisattva.
At the beginning, several years ago, at the beginning of the whole COVID thing, as we recall, it happened just overnight. Everything changed. And I worked in a field of career where I met with all kinds of people at all different kinds of circumstances, at all different levels of capability. And there was a lot of questions about how do we change our behavior to stay safe and to stay sanitary. And one, you know, we obviously couldn't shake hands anymore. So the question came up, how do you greet? And I was just beginning to flirt with the idea of studying Buddhism at the time, so I wasn't really at that level of consciousness. I didn't know anything about gassho, but I at some point, I don't know if I read this somewhere or one of my coworkers or the boss told me this or something, but he said, you know, you can greet someone by going like this, and you don't have to shake hands. It's like the Indian guys do it. It was the way they said it. So I began experimenting with this, and sometimes I got a response, and sometimes I didn't, and I felt a little bit awkward. But it is as an alternative to what we do sometimes, and some of the Western gun shows, if you want to think of them that way, shaking hands and so forth, that it's a really nice punctuation to the to a meeting. You know, it means hello, means goodbye, and it's just maybe it'll catch on in the marketplace. Who knows?
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, maybe the pandemic would make us, like, that was one of its great things of teaching us gassho. David Ray Bodhisattva.
I'm just chiming in after Joe and adding that I've had good success with it, you know, in the field as well. And that, you know, it's not, I think that when I do it, that people interpret it as specifically Buddhist, right? Because people know the Anjali Mudra. A lot of people do it before and after yoga class, and it's a phone emoji, right? That's very commonly used. So it seems like it's a human thing. I mean, it really, you know, as you were talking about it, it really seems like as you said the word wired, it seems there really is something, like I feel something change in my body when I do it.
May you study that endlessly. What changes in the body? What changes in awareness? What changes in relationship to the world? And we know, if it's not working, you know, you can tell if your mudra is off. You know, there's a crookedness to it. And if it doesn't work, there's plenty of other practices we have in our, just go sit zazen more than. But it's a great, great thing in the body. And it does have these ancient roots, of course, in Anjali Mudra. Although it's a little, the position's a little taught a little differently in yoga classes, which I kind of like. It's a heart, you know, your thumbs are close to your heart, but this is a heart practice, no question. Eve Bodhisattva.
You know, thank you very much for recognizing and highlighting the hands and the body, because I mean that's been important to me personally. And so I studied Bharatanatyam, which is rooted in the ancient Vedic roots, and the mudras that are in Bharatanatyam that are codified in the Natya Shastra, which is 500 years old, you know, derived from the Vedic prayer gestures that were used in ritual. Like somebody taught me this one once, which is liberation. One thing I've found when going from, you know, different cultural practices is that you do have to, you know, become aware of your body and the position of your body, and then let it sink back down into the unconscious. So it can sometimes be demanding to, you know, switch, mm-hmm. but I think it heightens awareness, or at least it has for me. Bharatanatyam, we do the namaste like, you know, like this with the right angle.
Yep.
And then I danced with the Thai Buddhist group when I was in my early 20s, and Thais in everyday life, they do the Y, mm-hmm. which is similar to the way we do the gassho, but then when you dance, you do it more stylized, and you open your hands like a flower, like that. And I think one thing I've noticed, you know, in doing mudras and stuff, it does balance out the left and the right sides of your body,
mm-hmm.
And which does something to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's different theories about that, but mm-hmm. I felt it in you know, myself. But one thing I think, you know, you maybe say implicitly is, you know, the bowing part. I think some Americans have trouble with that because, you know, it's the idea of deference and hierarchy. But I think for me, you know, the acknowledgement that you're part of something greater.
Mm-hmm.
When I danced with the Thai group, one of the things we did is they said that we did a Y at the beginning when we were preparing the dance, and they said, think about the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Was think about the lineage they mm-hmm. were part of. So that's been something that's very meaningful for me to acknowledge that,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the bowing I see is like being a part of something.
Mm-hmm.
Not, and you know, yeah, showing mm-hmm. deference to teachers, but it doesn't have to be
hierarchy in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you, Eve, for sharing that. Right. So we have this convention, and it's kind of nice to try out just that convention to see where your habits are. But again, even if we don't use our hands, we can embody this mudra. Oh.
You know, you were talking about kind of the simplicity of this practice, which I really appreciate, you know, because it's something that it just brings you back to sort of, it's a reminder to be sort of conscious of doing that. But, you know, it made me think of, I teach fourth grade, and so I read a lot about, you know, relationship building with students, because that's like the first thing towards, you know, having a good mm-hmm. classroom community. And it invariably it's about, like, the first thing that's mentioned is greeting students in the morning, you know, which seems like a very simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're all, like, into it the first week. You're like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do the fist bumps. I'm going to know everybody's name. And, like, a lot of practices, though, you know, you can lose your energy for it as the year goes on. And I also always question, like, okay, so really is that – how big of a deal is that? But greeting, I think, is such a, like, you know, it really goes to validation and welcoming and having your name said. And, you know, I mean, all these things just to me relate to, like, the title of one of Norman Fisher's books is, like, and it's from a koan of, like, when you greet me, I bow,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I just think, you know, again, like, greeting seems like it's a simple everyday practice, but it has a lot of meaning and, like, sacredness to it. So I appreciate just the reminder in a way of, like, simple practices, you know, with intention and vow are, like, really big deals on an everyday basis. So, thank you, Bo.
I was thinking of like the fist bump gosho.
Yeah.
Too, that you're finding.
It's a little more appropriate for a 9-year-old.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're finding the 9-year-olds and, you know, way.
Yeah.
And that's this creative quality. You know, we have kind of this craft or form, but then we have creative expression, which is, you know, we get out of our comfort zone. We try something different, you know, or we're like gosho-ing to people, you know, in a bow, we gosho and then we bow. And then people are like, what's that? You know, so we find a way to smile, to create some welcome. And, you know, it's good to practice welcoming things that aren't and people that aren't so fun. Like right. Usually it's really difficult when people are welcomed. You know, sometimes they shy away from it, like I was doing with Reb. And usually, though, it sinks in eventually. You say hi enough times, or you welcome, in a certain end, can be very silent. And, like, you know, people then start to feel a little safe. So then it creates a bridge to maybe a different kind of communication or intimacy, which, if our practice has that, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to jump in, but yeah. It's like, no, it really reminds me, like we welcome in our stairwell at the school, it's like fourth grade, fifth grade, and I think maybe sixth grade too. Yeah, and as you get older, you say hi to kids and they're like, we laugh about it because they're dead silent. Right. They don't make eye contact. But, you know, it, just what you're saying, it reminds me like, but keep doing it. You know, like, why not? Like, because you are planting seeds with your activity, right? Like, and you don't know what that activity will sort of mean later on, but you're still expressing, no matter the reception of the other person, also just they're in junior high, so you should be
right. Yes.
But you're creating that sort of welcoming and promoting an idea that this is a safe place for you to be just by doing it. But it cracks us up. We just laugh because the kids are just like,
well, they're too cool now.
Right? Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, the littler ones are all over you, you know, hi.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, sixth grade or so or whatever, you know, all of a sudden it's like, you know, and teenagers, you know, you're like.
It's all peer approval rather than.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also like, I want to push you away.
Yeah.
And so it's practicing with that. You don't get rid of your, you know, 11-year-old. Because all of a sudden they started, you know, dissing you. You might complain to your friends and go, oh, my God, you know, this wonderful, loving child now won't talk to me, and it's so painful. But, you know, that's our bodhisattva practice, you know. So being parents, many of you are parents, that's it's really helpful to be around young children and or not parent and around young children. But they teach us how to gosho.
Because the intimacy in that fast moment when each person is really being seen is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, like, even for me, the gosho is the hardest part of my practice.
Mm-hmm.
The slowing down, seeing somebody, having them see you completely.
Yep.
There's no artifice. There's no articulations that kind of hide yourself. It's very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this brings us to the end of my program, but we will, let's see, we'll chant the Bodhisattva vows, and I will sign off, and then we will come back and have announcements, the many wonderful announcements from Ancient Dragon, such a lively place, and then we'll have a little bit of temple cleaning where we gush out all of our cleaning materials, pick them up, say, thank you, cleaning materials, and put them back. And then tea. And you can stay or go for as much of that as you can deal with. And thank you all very much. May our intention equally extend to every being and place.
with the true Gosho of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.